The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth.
New York City is being invaded by diplomats. It's being invaded. 193 member states of the United Nations, and the chaos and the confusion that they bring to the city of New York is an unintentional metaphor for what's going on inside of the United Nations building. You know, the United Nations was this grand experiment. We're going to heal the world, bring everybody together. Does anybody have any confidence that the UN is going to do that? I mean, did we really ever have it? I mean, wishes were dreams and, you know, pigs were horses, but anything more than a grand wish or hope? Billions of dollars pour into this international organization, and yet they rank near dead last in every category they're supposed to lead. Have you ever been to a UN refugee camp? They are awful. They are full of despair. People sit literally just waiting to be raped or die. Mercury One was thrilled to be able to close two of these despair camps down in the Middle East in the last 12 months. Among aid agencies, the U.S. is ranked near the worst in the world. Fraud, corruption, mismanagement. It follows the U.N. wherever they go. UN peacekeepers caused a cholera outbreak in Haiti in 2010. Their employees have been accused of sexual harassment and exploitation in over 10 separate countries. On top of that, UN personnel cannot be sued in national courts, arrested or prosecuted for their actions. So President Trump is going to meet with them this week. Today, he's actually meeting with representatives of 120 other member states that say, we've had enough. We've just had enough. They're all pushing for long overdue reform. But two nations are curiously missing, Russia and China. They're refusing to attend. Why is that? Why wouldn't two of the five permanent members of the UN Security Council be interested in reforming the dumpster fire that is the UN? Follow the money. Follow the power. The United States cuts an $8 billion check to the United Nations every single year. We supply nearly 25% of the entire global budget. And they say America isn't exceptional. Of course, China and Russia want the status quo. Look at what they get in return. The UN provides them a check on U.S. power through their Security Council veto. It costs them little money in return. And they make us pay disproportionately all for them doing it to us. May I suggest that all thinking human being, anybody who is actually, for instance, if I may point out, Bono came to the idea that some of these systems that he has been propping up just don't work. Maybe it's time for bankrolling a corrupt, failing, and all-powerful institutional organization like the United Nations is over. And the time for reform is right now.
It's Monday, September 18th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
This is the sound of the very peaceful protest that happened in St. Louis this weekend. I had a hard time finding this story anywhere. And anytime I did see this story, it was pointed out over and over and over again. Peaceful protests, peaceful protests, peaceful protests. Well, 33 people were arrested. And it wasn't as violent as it could have been. But I don't know if you saw the reporter that was pretty assaulted, I would think. That's the way I would view it. Intimidated. If we can play cut three, here is the Black Lives Matter protesters assaulting a reporter in St. Louis this weekend. Now he is surrounded. He is all by himself. And some of these people are wearing masks. What is great is one of the protesters actually took him by the shoulder and escorted him out. Here's another guy who looked like a bad guy wearing a mask, and yet he fended the rest of them off and tried to push the reporter out of the way. Dan Gray was the reporter, and here's what he said afterwards.
Shaking. I'm shaking and a bit scared as the mob kind of surrounded me and my photographer, and we got water thrown at us. We got yelled and shoved and pushed. And I understand people's frustrations with the judge's decision, but they seem to be taking it out on the news media, and I don't know why they were taking it out on me in particular. But it is, so my boss said if there were any confrontation, any threat and violence, we're leaving. So we're leaving.
There is so much anger in the streets now. Lawrence Jones was on Fox. Lawrence is from theblaze.com. And he's a guy who followed Barack Obama, in fact, campaigned for Barack Obama, and then realized, wait a minute, all this stuff is a lie. What they're saying they're doing for my community is not happening. It's a lie. And he's become a constitutional conservative, more of a libertarian in many ways. He's a young kid who, a millennial, who is trying to figure life out and realizing these are all lies. Here's what he said about the protests in St. Louis over the weekend.
So what you're seeing is that a lot of these leftist agitators like Antifa are being bussed in by the liberals to create this chaos. Remember, a lot of these businesses that were torched during the Ferguson decision are still rebuilding back from 2014. And so what you don't realize, a lot of people don't realize, is that this is really not the city doing this. These are people that are paid to create chaos.
I know nobody wants to hear that. At least on the left. Nobody wants to hear that. Nobody wants to believe it. Nobody wants to listen to it. I mean, they'll accuse the right of all kinds of stuff. And believe me, I can accuse the right of a lot of stuff myself. But if we really want to get down to it, if we really want the truth, here's the truth. Alt-right is being funded, I believe, because I take people at their word, and I've seen evidence of it outside of the United States, and I've seen the influence, at least intellectually. But it's being funded, I believe, by the Russians. They're getting a lot of money from overseas because they're funding the Nazi movement's Jobbiks in Hungary. They're supporting the Nazi Golden Dawn Party in Greece, and they have direct ties here to the alt-right in America. That's the truth. Antifa is getting their money. A lot of this money is coming from the left and George Soros, and nobody seems to care. And I'm having a really hard time with I'm going to get into this a little later, but I was in Nantucket this weekend because I was asked by a guy who who I really believe in, I think is a really good guy, Tom Scott. He's the guy who started Nantucket Nectars, and we've become friends over the last few months. And he's a constitutionalist and a successful businessman and a man who's really on his own journey. He's trying to figure it all out. And I love people who will question all sides. And I went up, and the Nantucket Project is his kind of big thing that he does every year. And for the life of me, I couldn't figure this crowd out, which is a good thing in many ways. I couldn't figure out who they were. I know this, they were definitely not fans of mine. But I didn't go for that reason. And I listened to a group of people talk about some really fascinating and worthwhile things. And yet there was about 20% of the audience that had paid a lot of money to be there, who I'm not sure they really wanted anything other than confirmation of their bias. And I don't want to stick them out as being unique. I think that happens with everybody. You just want confirmation of your own bias. I was walking into a church on Saturday because they were having a big deal about God in church. And I brought my family. And so I'm walking into church on Saturday with my kids. And somebody wearing a badge who had paid to go to the conference shouts out in this crowd, "Well, look at that. Glenn Beck walking into a church. This is a big thing." And I said, "Really? Not really. I do this every Sunday and sometimes on Saturday." My kids just looked at him and then looked at me like, what the? He didn't know who I was, and he didn't care. He didn't care. I had dinner on Saturday. You want to talk about a head explosion? I had dinner Saturday, and at first I was told that it was like only like 10 people were coming, and I'm like, how did I get this invite? That's not possible. With Paul Kagame, who was the former president of, or maybe current president of Rwanda, and really an amazing guy. And then I find out Saturday afternoon that Vicente Fox is coming, and I'm like, you have got to be kidding. Oh my gosh. How am I going to this dinner? Oh, well, I'll just listen. I'll just listen to what he has to say. And I'm just not going to, I'm just going to eat my food and I'm just going to go away. But I get there and there's like a whole bunch of people. Jennifer Garner is there, who was really impressive and gracious, really amazing. I'll have to, if we have time today, I'll tell you about that, because it's nice to meet somebody who you think is probably going to be a jerk and was absolutely not. So I sit down, and I don't want to say who I was sitting with because it was a closed dinner, but I was sitting next to somebody that was very, very influential and famous. And he was delightful and wonderful, and there's not a thing we agreed with. But we had a great conversation about things that were meaningful. His wife, on the other hand, decided to, the minute we sat down, to blame me for all of the problems the United States is going through, blaming me for Donald Trump and everything else. And I sat there and I tried to have a conversation with her on, well, do you know why Donald Trump was elected? I mean, do you have any? No, after she stopped talking, she stopped listening. It was weird. It was as if she thought her mouth was the listening device. Somehow or another, if the mouth stops working, the ears stop working. It was weird. The only reason I bring this up is because we have to realize that our mouth is not connected to our ears. In fact, our mouth should probably work less and our ears should work more. Beyond that, we have to start talking about the things that are uncomfortable. We have to start dealing with things that are uncomfortable to us and start listening and discussing and stop shouting and blaming. I don't need to say this to this audience, but if there's bad cop, I want the bad cops arrested. If there's a bad judge, I want the bad judge arrested. But how do we have this conversation? How do we have this conversation in a country to where we don't believe that any of the leaders are going to get off? I understand now for the first time. I didn't understand, 20 years ago, and I probably didn't understand 5 years ago. But I do now, and I think you do too. How people could cheer when O.J. Simpson got off. Do you remember that? It was the first time in my lifetime that I thought, oh my gosh, hey, justice isn't served always. That was a new thought for me. Wasn't for a lot of African Americans. It sure was for this white guy from Seattle. Whoa, wait a minute. The justice system could go wrong. And I think the same people who are saying, how can people be cheering that Donald Trump won? I think it's the same phenomena that happened with O.J. Simpson years ago. They're so tired of being kicked in the face. They're so tired of justice not being served that when somebody works the system and punches the system in the face and beats the system, you cheer. I will tell you, though, I think it's going to end the same way that it did with O.J. Simpson. I think there comes a time that we all say, yeah, because look at the ratings on O.J. Simpson now in the African-American community. They're all kind of saying, yeah, maybe not so much.
Coming up on the show today, we're going to do everything we can to make Glenn tell us who he was sitting next to at the dinner the other night. Pretty much our only goal on the program.
I'm not going to do it.
We can trick you into it. That'll happen. You usually blur things out and get yourself in trouble. That
should happen. It won't happen today, but it probably will in the future. I'll be like, I didn't tell that story. Oh, crap, I wasn't going to tell you that. Imagine losing $2,000 after one incident. It's worse, I think, worse than that. Somebody comes up to you and robs you. You're personally violated. Somebody comes into your house. And it is worse than the money you lose. $2,000 after one incident. That's what the FBI says the average property loss is after one burglary. But you don't feel safe in your house for a long time. Protect your home. Try Simply Safe Home Security right now. It's what we have in our house. Simply Safe protects every door, every window in your home. You're going to get motion sensors, entry sensors. Simply Safe system, completely wireless, so you can set it up yourself without drilling holes in your wall. And you'll have professional alarm monitoring around the clock, ready to send police. That's at $15 a month. Simply Safe. You can be sure that your home and your things are protected. Go to SimplySafeBeck.com. Get a special 10% discount when you order today. And if you want the security system right away, you could go to Best Buy, go to the local Best Buy, and they have it there, or save 10% by going to the website right now, simplysafebeck.com. That's simplysafebeck.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
You know, what's amazing is I can't find a single story on theblaze.com and the things that matter, the stories that matter about the Emmys. Not one. It's almost like they don't matter at all.
No, you're going to trust the Blaze, though?
Yeah, I mean, I know. Typical. I know.
Right.
I know.
I mean, I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah.
I don't even see the biggest story of the day on the stories that matter.
What is
it? I mean, it's a cool section. Great idea to have the best story. But, like, they're not even covering the naked egg taco.
The what?
The naked egg taco at Taco Bell. Don't tell me you haven't.
No, I haven't heard that.
I guess maybe. It's unbelievable. It's a taco, but the taco shell is a fried egg.
Not sound good.
They stuff the cheese and the potatoes and the bacon inside the egg, and it's folded over in the shape of a taco shell.
It's a little too rubbery to sound delicious.
I don't know.
I mean, this is something I think we need to try.
Well,
you know, because it's
okay.
It's an egg.
Yeah.
Because you can make a taco shell out of almost anything. People don't know this.
Right.
People have not been covering this.
Yeah.
But
I don't know if I want my egg to be so rubbery that it's that it is like a taco shell. That does not sound appetizing.
Don't know until you try.
Maybe it's just me.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So I want to talk about Ben Shapiro.
Actually, you mentioned you saw Jennifer Garner in real life, and I'd rather hear about that. No offense, Ben. I'm sure, you know, Ben's a good guy. We like Ben.
There's a lot to be said about the Jennifer Garner thing.
Yeah.
There's a lot.
Okay.
And I'm not going to share it with you. But Ben Shapiro, he was out at Berkeley. And I want you to know that people who listen will say, oh, she's cowering in a corner. No, not cowering in a corner. Speak the truth and speak it with wisdom and facts and without hyperbole and without name calling.
Because I think a lot of people translate what you're saying a lot of times as cower in the corner and just, you know, go along to get along.
Yeah.
That's not really what you're saying.
No. Your corner, what corner? Do you belong in a corner? I don't belong in a corner. My corner is my country. I'm going to speak out and I'm going to come out for my country. I'm not going to cower in a corner. However,
what about really divisive issues, though? Because sometimes...
May I? I know you really are focused on Jennifer Garner, but...
Can we talk about that? I mean, because a lot of people are divided.
No, I want you to think about her and then listen about what Ben Shapiro was saying. This is Ben Shapiro at Berkeley. He is taking on a person on the left about abortion. And listen to the way he handles this.
So my question was about abortion, and I just wanted to know, why exactly do you think a first trimester fetus has moral value?
Okay, so a first trimester fetus has moral value because whether you consider it a potential human life or a full-on human life, it has more value than just a cluster of cells. If left to its natural processes, it will grow into a baby. So the real question is, where do you draw the line? So you can draw the line at the heartbeat, because it's very hard to draw the line at the heartbeat. There are people who are adults who are alive because of a pacemaker. They need some sort of outside force generating their heartbeat. Okay, are you going to do it based on brain function? Okay, well, what about people who are in a coma? Should we just kill them? Right. The problem is, anytime you draw any line other than the inception of the child, you end up drawing a false line that can also be applied to people who are adults. So either human life has intrinsic value or it doesn't. I think we both agree that adult human life has intrinsic value. Can we start from that premise?
I believe that sentience is what gives something moral value, not necessarily being a human alone.
Okay, when you're asleep, can I stab you?
I'm still considered sentient when I'm asleep.
Okay, if you are in a coma from which you may awake, can I stab you?
Well, then, no. I guess not. I mean, like,
I'm glad you answered that, because I have no interest in actually murdering you.
But that's still potential sentience, and it's still a potential...
I agree. It is potential sentience. You know what else is potential sentience? Being a fetus.
Oh, man. See, I mean, there's nothing better.
The issue I have with that, though, is that if I'm in a coma and I'm not, like, doing anything to anyone, I'm not causing any issues amongst the world, whereas an unwanted child may or may not be a burden to people.
Oh, okay, well, there are lots of people who are unwanted, right? I mean, there are lots of people's parents who are unwanted, right? We're a bunch of college students. the problem is that now you're shifting the argument, right? Before you were making the argument based on the intrinsic value of a life based on sentience, and now you're talking about the level of burden that somebody presents as a separate moral argument, okay? I don't believe that you being a burden on somebody is justification for them killing you, as a general rule.
I'll leave it at that, but I appreciate you and thank you.
No, thanks.
I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you probably
should. You should probably leave the state after that. That's amazing, because, you know, how you can... first of all, you can go to their last argument there. A burden? I mean, you know, look, a lot of people, when you have someone who is hooked up to machines in a coma, it's an incredible burden on a family. But because you care about human life, you still try to fight through it.
Yeah.
And the state, you're right.
And the state.
Cost. I mean, there's a million things you could argue on that.
Right.
That is embarrassing. And the reason, it's not, you could fault the guy for making the point the way he did, The problem is there's no value in the point. It's not that he made the point poorly. It's that the point's ridiculous.
So but here's the thing. I mean, being able to have that dialogue, and that's quite honestly why people want to shut other people up. And when you don't have the intellectual firepower of Ben Shapiro, then you get down to, well, that's because your side did it first. And that's just, there's nothing to be gained there. Nothing to be gained.
There's a moment where you go into like the gym at your local Y, and you know, you're going into a pickup team. It's like, I got one other guy I'm just going to bring in. And just LeBron James walks in.
Yeah.
That is the Ben Shapiro moment. It's like,
he is probably our William F. Buckley. Jonah Goldberg are the William F. Buckley of our generation.
It's one of those things when you have one of those guys on your side, you're never losing an argument.
So I met, or I shouldn't say I met. I met some people around him, and I listened to Ray Rice this weekend.
Ray Rice, the former Ravens running back,
who might be known for something else.
Yeah, quite a public incident at a casino in Atlantic City in an elevator.
He was more popular at this convention than I was.
Wait a minute, he's saying something.
Now that's saying something. That is like, huh, okay.
That says a lot.
I was interested, and I'm not sure how I feel about him yet. I'd like to talk to him. But he's on this, I don't know if you'd call it a tour. He wants to have his voice heard and set the record straight. I don't think there's any coming back for him.
Not now. I know initially, because he had a domestic violence incident. If you don't remember that video in the elevator,
it was a really, really bad one.
And he's, you know, he was released and has tried to come back, has shown interest in that, but you know, no one's given him a chance.
He spoke and he said, there's no excuse, and it happened once, and he said it never happened before, it never has happened since. And he said the woman who was my girlfriend is now my wife, and he said, you know, we have, I think he has 3 or 4 children now. And he said, we are doing things together, to speak out against, abuse. He said, but there's a problem in our communities. We don't ever want to address it. What's interesting is one of the women that was flying in for this conference happened to, by chance, be seated right next to Ray and his wife on the airplane. And she started a domestic abuse program around the time that Ray was. She said, I've said his name probably 10,000 times. And she said, I've never spoken to him until we sat next to each other. And she said, it was fascinating. And she said, I applaud him for what he's doing. And she was, you know, speaking about what they're doing. But she said something really interesting. She said, first, Ray said, fear rules the world. And he said, I define fear as flee everything and run. Flee everything and run. Fear, an acronym. Or face everything and rise. He said, I have decided to face everything and rise. And he said, I want to rise for my children. Now imagine your dad is known as a guy who knocked your mother out while you were dating. Imagine what you as a child are going to go through having that as your dad and nobody ever forgetting or forgiving you on that. She said that she started around the same time this domestic abuse because she was personally involved with somebody who was killed. And she said, everybody said, oh, there was no signs of it. And she said, yeah, there really were. She said, but the problem is nobody's teaching about domestic abuse because no one wants to hear it. And I think this is really important, not even on domestic abuse, but on our country. You know those friends that just don't want to hear the truth, or they don't want to hear warnings? They don't want to hear, hey, this is not going to end well. She said they did some studies and they found that the minute you say domestic abuse, nobody listens. They're finished. And because nobody wants to hear about it because it's too horrible. And B, nobody thinks it's them. And she said until it becomes them, they don't see any of the lead up. So there's no real teaching, because all we really do is teach about domestic abuse. Hey, don't knock your wife out in the elevator. She said, but what they found is that if they change the language just a little bit and make it personal and make it about something that everybody has seen and make it about the warning signs instead of abuse, unhealthy relationships. Signs of an unhealthy relationship, she said, now people start to listen. And so they found the way to talk about it. And one of the things that we spoke about this weekend was technology is, we have zero experience. Now, if you're a millennial, you have almost zero experience talking about hard things face to face, doing hard things face to face. So, how are we going to be able to talk about things? How are we going to be able to communicate to each other? How are we going to be able to get through things if we can't say the hard things to one another? So she's been going around the country, and this organization is called One Love, and her name is Katie Hood. And she said, we made a 17-minute film, and then we would go into schools and we would show it. She said, and then we started working with, I think it was the people at Apple. And she said, the people of Apple said, why don't we take this 17 seconds or 17 minutes and make it into 30 seconds? She said, well, it's very complex. They said, yeah, no, I think we can do that. Here's how they took the Ray Rice issue and then packaged those issues into something that was 30 seconds long to show you, hey, there might be some signs that you should watch out for. She said, people think that it goes from like 90% I'm not a part of an abusive relationship to about 50% saying, holy cow, that stuff, well, I'm not now, that stuff has happened to me. Maybe I dodged a bullet. Listen.
Because I love you. I want to be your only guy.
Because I love you. Skip class with me. Let's stay in bed today.
Because I love you, I just want to be with you so freaking much.
Because I love you.
I waited for you after ChemLab.
You were walking with Mark?
Because I love you.
You shouldn't be hanging out with that dude.
You should know how dumb that makes me look.
I don't care if she's your lab partner.
Why do you have texts from him?
Because I love you. This number?
Delete.
Because I love you. This Jason number?
Delete.
And Ben?
Delete.
Because I love you, I should smash your phone.
I'll let you give me your password instead.
Because I love you.
I will check your texts every day.
You got lucky. Because I love you.
Because I love you.
You think it's okay.
Because I love you. You understand.
Because I love you, you stop talking to your classmates.
And you feel completely alone.
Because I love you.
The website is joinonelove.org. It's a kind of a creepy ad, actually.
It is kind of a creepy ad. Yeah. It's weird because it starts out with
seems nice.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, and that's a love story.
I think that's the point. Taking 17 minutes of what seems nice into and turning it into abuse in 30 seconds is pretty remarkable. I'd love to hear your thoughts on whether we should have Ray Rice on or not.
I would be very interested to talk to him.
I was fascinated.
I've heard he really has made the effort to try to turn this thing around.
Sure seemed like it to me.
Whether you're going to forgive him or not, I'm sure he wants forgiveness, but he doesn't expect anyone to forget about what happened.
Yeah.
But I have heard a lot of people who really stand by his sincere effort to turn it around. I think that would be a fascinating talk, maybe with him and his wife.
Nothing quite like when you have that feeling of making somebody that you care about happy. Make that person smile again. Pro Flowers wants to help you surprise somebody for no reason at all. And they're going to help you out with a special deal. Get 20% off of their unique summer rose bouquets or any other bouquets of $29. Their colorful rainbow roses are always a hit if you're not sure what you're going to send somebody. And Pro Flowers bouquets are guaranteed to stay fresh for at least 7 days or your money back. And you control the delivery date. Get 20% off your summer roses or any of the other bouquets for $29 or more. All you have to do is go to proflowers.com. Use the promo code Glenn at checkout. That's proflowers.com. Promo code Glenn. Don't wait. Do it for no reason at all. And do it today.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Let me go to Barry in West Virginia. Hello, Barry. You're on.
Hey, Glenn. My name is Barry. I'm a 54-year-old man from West Virginia. I'm a child of an abusive father. He passed away 17 years ago. No, I'm sorry. God, in 93. And it took me basically a long time to get over the hate that I had for this man. And I became a single parent from my first wife, the mother of my children. And I had to be mother and father to them. I think you ought to have Ray Rice on just for the simple fact of his ability. Hopefully he forgave himself and his children are going to be involved, and he needs to explain at that moment what happened and why it happened. And
yeah, I will tell you, Barry, I heard him speak this weekend, and to me, it did sound like he had dealt with it with his wife. He had dealt with it with his children, and he did lead with the hardest one of all is to forgive yourself for it. I'm not sure if that work has been done yet, but we'll look into it. See if we can get Ray Rice on. Interesting conversation.
Glenn Beck.
If you are a pathetic loser like myself, you might be a little intimidated by something like Blue Apron. I know I kind of was at the beginning, because Blue Apron offers this great service where they send all these gourmet meals to your house with all the ingredients included in the exact amounts that you need them, but it's still like cooking, right? So, like, I don't know. To me, if it doesn't have a beep, 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 I don't know how to do it. Blue Apron actually can even bridge that gap for somebody like me, and you make great gourmet meals that your family is going to love, and you'll be the hero of the house. Check out this week's menu. Get your first three meals free. Give it a shot with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/stew. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. It's blueapron.com/stew. blueapron.com/stew. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. It's good food, and you get to eat it too.
Love. Courage. Truth.
Broken glass littered the sidewalk. The debris was evidence of what had occurred hours earlier. Chaos. Even though the press is calling it peaceful, it was chaos. Shop and restaurant owners inside University City outside of St. Louis woke up to sweep the glass from their broken windows of their businesses again. They were innocent victims of the violence that erupted after Jason Stockley was acquitted of murder on Friday. Stockley, a white former police officer, shot and killed Anthony Lamar Smith, a black man, during a 2011 car chase. It's a colossal failure of our nation that one more of our citizens, you know, doesn't understand that this is not the thing to do here. I don't want to get into the officer or the case, because quite honestly, I haven't been following it and I wasn't on the jury. If there's a problem in St. Louis, it needs to be fixed. but rioting and looting and destruction and chaos. That's the way they do things in totalitarian countries and socialist countries and underdeveloped countries. That's not the way we do things here. It is that very chaos that a lot of immigrants came here to get away from. If you want to protest something, you have every right, and I'll stand for your right to do it. You want to stand up and protest something that you had nothing to do with, and you don't understand all of the details, as has been the case in other instances. Go ahead. You have a right to do that too, but you have a responsibility to do it in a peaceful manner. Remember Frederick Douglass, Booker T. Washington, Martin Luther King? They would not stand with you. Their protest strategy was never violent. They knew that riots in the end would not work. And by the way, Martin Luther King never wore a mask. Never. The bad guys, the enemies of his people, of all people, the Klan, they were the ones that wore the masks. Let your face be seen. Bad guys wear masks. And certainly something worth protesting for, something worth living for, is something worth going to jail for. You'll be joining great ranks. Gandhi, Martin Luther King, Bonhoeffer. But the moment you smash a window of a small business and you mess up that owner's effort and right to make a living, you forfeit your ability to be heard. You're no longer a protester at that point. You're simply a felon.
It's Monday, September 18th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Danielle Ryder, a Hobby Lobby customer, found a decoration in one of their stores offensive. I have to tell you, I like Hobby Lobby. It is one of the only stores that I frequent a lot. I am probably in a Hobby Lobby myself, probably at least once a month. I paint, so I buy painting supplies and everything else. My wife goes there all the time. And my kids and I, we go through and we look at the models and everything else. And just once in a while, just for fun, we just kind of walk the whole thing. And there's a lot of stuff in their home accessory department that I find offensive. Yes, I do. I'm like, who would put that up? Who would put that up? Not in an offensive, like, any other way than, wow, is that bad taste? Okay. This is not what Danielle Ryder did. She shared an image on something she found so offensive, and she requested that Hobby Lobby remove the decor from their shelves. So what was it? She posted a picture of a shelf with glass bottles containing what appeared to be replicas of raw cotton plants. She captioned the photo, "This decor is so wrong on so many levels. There is nothing decorative about raw cotton." What? Since when? Have you ever seen people who just take sticks and put them in a vase? That's the same thing, isn't it?
Oh, I got piles of sticks all over my house.
That's right.
There are sticks in every corner of my home now, tied with, of course, twine,
because
the only use in modern society for twine is to hold sticks up in the corner of your
house. Correct. And by the way, what is cotton? It's a plant. This is basically a flower in a vase. That's it. "This is so wrong on so many fronts. There's nothing decorative about raw cotton, a commodity which was gained at the expense of African American slaves." Oh my gosh. "A little sensitivity goes a long way," she added. "Please remove this decor." Okay, let's go through a couple of things. Do you ever wear cotton? Danielle, do you ever wear cotton? Because do you know at one point that was picked by slaves? There is nothing decorative. And may I ask, you're certainly not using that cotton shirt to be decorative, are you? I mean, it's just a container, right? It's a container of your flesh. It's not decorative.
Clothing is nothing really, but at this point,
decorative. Yeah.
Because we could all control the temperature in each building.
Yes.
We don't even need to. I'm not encouraging anyone here, by the way, to come in without clothing on. But in theory, you could.
Crucifix. A crucifix in urine. That's art. But a plant is not. And by the way, Danielle, please tell me that that you don't wear denim either. Because A, denim is made out of cotton, but B, indigo. Indigo is a color. All that blue, if you're not wearing blue, are you? Because blue, indigo was pretty much, I don't know if you mine it or how you get it, by slaves. Slaves did that. And also tobacco and rice. You haven't eaten any rice, have you? Or rum? Or sugar? Because most sugar back in the day came from plantations here in the United States, and they were all farmed by slaves. So please tell me, Danielle, that you're holding these, you're holding your restaurant accountable every time you go in and there's a sugar packet right there in the center of your table. You're saying, aren't you, I can't believe how insensitive you are.
That's why I only will use sweet and low.
That's exactly right. No slaves ever involved in that. No. Of course, you would have a hard time telling your person, your waiter or waitress, wait person, if you will, that you have a problem with that, because you, of course, don't frequent restaurants because waiters used to be African-American slaves. So they once held that job. So there's nothing. How dare you use a wait person, right? Or a maid or a seamstress or a launderer. Or a driver, or a stable hand, or a carpenter, or a stonemason, or a blacksmith, or a weaver, or a fisherman, or a sailor, or a bricklayer, or a baker, or a tailor, or a painter, or porters, any of those things, I'm sure you don't use, right? Here's the thing. This story is the number two story on The Blaze. Now, The Blaze has launched kind of softly today a redesign of the front page and the way that we are writing stories. And I have told the writers, and we've gone over this now for quite a while, and we worked all last week together, every day last week, trying to develop a new writing style. And I have told them, I just stay out. You can have perspective, but add your perspective to the end of a story. Don't tell me about a historic speech, because that is opinion. It's opinion that is your that it's historic. Tell me about what happened. And if you want to add perspective, then let's make that at the end of perspective. But I said, don't waste anybody's time. Nobody has time to be able to read stories. Nobody has time. You have about 10 seconds that you're reading a story. So let's get to it. And let's make sure that we're only covering the things that really matter. Now, that's really hard to do. So this story came out yesterday, and I talked to Leon, who's the editor of The Blaze, and he made a case that this story is a story that matters. And I just want to read the perspective. So does this story matter? Blaze answers, no. But you reported on it. Yes, we did. And here's why. Our new directive as a company is to never waste your time as a reader. And we're taking that seriously. The reason why we included this story is because we felt it was indicative of how blessed we are as a nation and people. Maslow's hierarchy of needs would put this pretty high up. As you can guess, the vase being offensive is really something that only people who are in the most stable of economic conditions could or would include in their worries of the day. Perspective is what America is missing. You don't need another story to outrage you or to show you how crazy things have gotten. You can find those stories on any radio program, any television show, and any news site. We're not going to give you those stories. It's a waste of your time, and it's taking us in the wrong direction. But we do feel that the Americans do need stories that show how blessed we really are. Our problems that we are dealing with are the dreams for much of the world. It isn't our privilege that is so disturbing. It is our lack of gratitude and perspective. For people to take their time to worry about a bunch of cotton in a vase in a store, which 85% of Americans will never step into, not because they're against it or for it or anything else, is because they're just never going to walk into it, should show us that most are not spending their time searching for ways to simply feed their families or find a roof over their head. America is blessed even for the worst off. America does have real issues. But what some Americans call problems are certainly blessings to much of the world. So what matters most? This. Don't get distracted by stories like this or discouraged by those who have enough wealth, health, and time that they can spend their time in worry about meaningless things like a cotton plant in a vase. Instead, why don't we work together, take our time helping those who are truly struggling, instead of posting about a product in a store that honestly will never affect you or your life in any way, shape, or form.
Find that story and the perspective from Sarah Taylor at TheBlaze.com right now. The headline is Hobby Lobby's offensive decoration has gone bonkers viral. 33,000 Facebook reactions and counting. And then you find out kind of like that's because it's true. It's the type of thing that gets people through the day these days without any meat, without any real value.
My hate keeps me warm. So as I was reading that yesterday, and Leon and I were talking about this article that Sarah wrote. I'm on my way back from Nantucket, and I just posted something, leaving Nantucket broken yet optimistic or something like that. Just searching for something that matters. And Dwayne posted, and by the time I landed, I read his post. He said, Glenn, I need to thank you for something. Your program over the last couple of weeks has pushed me out of my comfort zone like you can't imagine. I'm literally writing to you from a bus on the way to Houston to help those who have been devastated by Hurricane Harvey. I'm a father of four in my mid-40s from Ohio. Like most, I got to work every day. I have homework and sports in the evening with my kids, and if I'm lucky, I might have an hour or two of time to myself. My wife of 17 years, much the same, without the luxury of most any downtime to herself, as she has to work nights. We have a nice house and a couple of cars to show for all of our work. Thankfully, our kids are healthy, and we have family vacation, and we'll enjoy a night out on the town occasionally. But with all that we're blessed with, now listen to this, I felt as if we had no meaning. I've felt this way for several years. What good is all of this work? What is it really affording me? What is the purpose? Whew, Dwayne, I have to tell you, that was me yesterday. I was yesterday morning, I woke up, and I was a completely broken man. I was done. What is the meaning of any of this? He writes, both my wife and I were raised Catholic, went to Catholic schools. A few years ago, we just stopped going to church. No real reason. Our attendance just became less and less frequent and eventually stopped. A few months ago, my wife was invited to a new church and asked me to go as well. We've been attending this non-denominational church ever since, and the message I'm receiving is much more impactful than what I had experienced in churches before. The message that I was hearing from church was one of action, one of involvement. I was being challenged to be more than just a person who shows up on Sunday and then goes back to my routine, to do something that matters. Then, Texas was hit by the hurricane. I have 2 hours every day of commute time, and I can say that the vast majority of that time is spent listening to your program, and I listen to your description of the devastation and to those on the ground helping to bring some sense of hope back to the victims. That weekend, a call came out from our pastor to help with donations and volunteers. Well, I hesitantly signed up. With a trip about 2 weeks away, there was plenty of time to find excuses on why I couldn't go. My kids' soccer. I'd miss work. Almost every time I wanted to back out, there was something that pushed me to go. And one of the biggest was your show over the past week, hammering home, find your meaning. So here I sit, Glenn, on a 57-passenger bus somewhere in Kentucky. We have 23 people of all ages. One flew in from Massachusetts to join us. Several in the bus couldn't afford the cost of the trip, about $300 each, so we set up a GoFundMe account, and we raised over $1,500 to ensure that they could go and use their time to help. Below me, the bottom of the bus is filled with donations, thousands of dollars of diapers and wipes and food and cleaning supplies. And in the row seat next to me sits a binder with over 300 letters of encouragement to the people of Houston from a junior high school. I am thankful that there are some that actually are well on the path to knowing what matters. They were the ones that organized this trip and donated items and money and even asked their students to write letters. And I'm hopeful that in my small effort to help those in Texas, I will come to recognize what matters most so I may teach my children and encourage them to do the same. Thanks for the part you played in driving me to look for what matters. Hopefully, we'll be able to find Dwayne and get him on the phone in the next couple of days as he finds meaning in Houston. Equifax recently announced a breach could affect 143 million Americans. Do you know if your name is even on that list? Were you affected? So far, the organization has determined that credit card numbers of about 200,000 consumers and personal data, including social security numbers for about 180,000, were taken and are in play right now. But they have access to all of them. And once your information is out, it's out. Somebody's identity is stolen every 2 seconds, and LifeLock is there to detect a wide range of identity thefts. So if there is a problem, somebody here in the United States, a U.S.-based identity restoration specialist, will work to fix it. Nobody can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock can help you see more threats to your identity. Call LifeLock now. 1-800-LIFELOCK or go to LifeLock.com. If you use the promo code Beck, you get 10% off of your membership at LifeLock.com. Save 10% now. LifeLock.com. Promo code Beck.
Glenn Beck.
Stu, could you just do me a favor? Could you just Google something for me?
Sure.
A wall.
Okay.
Could you just Google that for me? A wall? I just like, yeah. What,
like a definition? Definition
of a wall or wall.
A continuous vertical brick or stone structure that encloses or divides an area of land?
No, get to the one where it says a concept of amnesty.
That I'm going to be scrolling for a while,
yeah.
I think, to get
you
to.
You don't think that's...
No.
Scroll amnesty wall. Google that. Amnesty wall.
Amnesty
maybe there's something. Because there's a new thing happening here where, and we're going to play the audio for you in a second, where everybody is saying, no, he didn't mean a wall. Well, what the hell did he? What? Wait, what?
Well, you thought he meant a wall, like a physical
like a wall,
structure?
Like the one that I thought we all agreed on was the definition of the four-letter word wall.
See, he didn't mean a wall. You're thinking of a wall like a wall you would use to separate.
Yes.
That's okay. Yes. That's a common mistake. No, that's
so. What did he mean when? Because I heard somebody say, "No, he was talking about a concept." When he was talking about hanging solar panels
on the
what
concept,
what kind
yes.
of concept holds solar panels up?
A wall concept.
Okay.
A solar wall concept hangs solar panels.
So this wall, it's a wall concept. Is that like an occasional table?
Okay. Yes, I think it's like an occasional table.
I mean, it's an occasional table. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is the rest of the time, but occasionally I think it's a table. I don't know what that means. So maybe this is a concept wall, like an occasional table. But I will tell you, if that indeed is true, occasional tables are always still tables.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Is it a real wall you're talking about or a fence?
I think that what the definition of a wall is something that we all need to have a serious conversation. In some cases, it will be a Ballard fence, which is what, in fact, was appropriated last year, and we've already begun construction.
In that tweet, the president tweeted yesterday, the wall, which is already under construction in the form of new renovation of old and existing fences and
this
walls.
This is Mark Short over the weekend from the White House.
That's a far cry from there will be a wall and Mexico will pay for it.
Well, Wolf, there's already, in fact, in many cases along the Rio Grande River, levees that are built that, in fact, are higher in some cases than what the wall would be. So, yes, it is a myriad of different structures along the wall that we expect to be secure to make sure that America is safe.
He promised the wall, and Mexico will pay for it. Yeah. Will he deliver on that promise?
The president's going to deliver on his promises.
How are you going to convince the Mexicans to pay for it? They say there's no way they're going to pay for it. The president of Mexico, he says that isn't happening. We all saw the transcript of that conversation he had with the president.
I've doubted the president before and been proven wrong. I suspect that he's going to make sure that that wall is built and that Mexico will pay for it.
They have to have a conversation about what the word wall means.
What do you mean?
Because we were told there was going to be a wall.
A physical wall.
And now we have to have a serious conversation about the definition of a wall.
No, actually, we don't. Here's from Fox and Friends. Here's Steve Ducey.
Has the wall almost become symbolic? I mean, I know the president ran on it. It was a mantra. But at the same time, border crossings have gone down dramatically.
Yeah.
And you were talking about how the wall exists in certain forms, and there's money to go to it, has to come from Congress. But do you think we're going to get to the point where maybe they won't build a wall?
Maybe they won't build a wall.
So the definition of wall is mantra? It's mantra.
Yes.
It's not a wall. Like when I think of a wall, I think of a wall.
No, this is more of cotton in a vase. This is more decorative.
Oh, it's decorative.
It's decorative.
Okay.
The wall is more decorative and gets us to start a conversation, which is another theory that was passed around this weekend.
So is Trump going back on his promise on the wall, or was the wall his blunt way of raising the issue? Saying build a wall is just a catchier way of saying fix our borders. Oh. Face it, saying I love you is way better than saying I have a biological attraction to you that may wear off at some point.
It wasn't a wall. It was a catchier way of saying control the border. That is what it is?
Yeah. That's clearly what it is. It's just
what it was.
Right.
So when they were saying wall, what they were saying was basically amnesty.
Yes.
Okay, so it's an amnesty.
See, here's the deal. Look, I understand. People want to live here. They want to live where Fox is telling them to go live, because you don't want to feel like you were duped. And I understand that. And it is human nature. And you want to give somebody you've trusted, you've put a lot of stock into. And so you don't want to feel like, oh, wait a minute, he was lying. So what you will do is you will lower the standards. It is the Overton window. You will lower the standards and you'll say, yes, well, but him just saying that has turned around people coming across the border. Well, why is it? Why is it we wouldn't have a conversation in America on amnesty, and why wouldn't we have a conversation on any kind of border security that seemed reasonable to people? We wouldn't have that conversation because we said the next president that comes in, all he's going to do is reverse it. You have to have a physical wall because the next president, and so we'll be going back and forth every 4 years. We'll just be going back and forth, and we can't do that. That was your reason. And now people just don't want to feel humiliated, and they don't want to feel like they were duped. And so they're giving themselves an out. Please don't go over the cliff with the rest of society. Please don't do that. There has to be something that is true and solid, like a wall in your life, that you say, okay, I'm not going to cross this wall.
So you're saying I can cross those lines when I need to, is what you're saying.
No,
in my life, certain lines that I can just kind of move over when needed.
Exactly right, except completely reverse it. Then you have it.
Then everything will be fine.
All right. There's a story about the Dallas School District that is now weighing renaming schools after Franklin, Jefferson, and Madison. There are schools that they are now exploring taking the name of Franklin, Jefferson, and Madison off. Okay. Well, Thomas Jefferson, I can understand because that's an easy one. For the intellectually lazy, it's an easy one. If you don't really know history, you have only listened to history in sound bites and you've got it from a social justice warrior, I understand Thomas Jefferson. Benjamin Franklin? Benjamin Franklin was an abolitionist, one of the strongest abolitionists, who died as a joke because they were trying to smear him in the South. Because he had become such a strong abolitionist, they tried to smear him and say he went crazy. And you want to take his name off? I'm having a hard time getting my arms around that one.
He's like the example of what you want to hold up as a guy.
He's the guy. He is the guy.
It's easy to be anti-slavery now. Everybody's anti-slavery now. Back then, everybody supported it. It was the thing to do. It was the way of the world. It was the way of the world before there was an America. It was the way of the world when America started. To take that stance at that time takes immense bravery. And the man who, you know, one of the founders who did that, and he was not alone in that, but one of the founders who did that was Ben Franklin, and he's still getting beat up like all the other founders.
Now, let me just give you this. Slavery is such an atrocious debasement of human nature that it is an open source of serious evils. The unhappy man who has been treated as a brute animal too frequently sinks beneath the common standard of the human species. The galling chains that bind his body do also fetter his intellectual facilities and impair the social affections of his heart. To instruct, to advise, to qualify those who have been restored to freedom for the exercise and enjoyment of civil liberty and to procure for their children an education calculated for the future situation in life, these are the great outlines of the Annex Plan which we have adopted. I have conceived a higher opinion of the natural capacities of the black race than I had ever before entertained. Their apprehension seems as quick, their memory is strong, and their docility is in every respect equal to that of white children. So in other words, he's saying, you know what? Everything we've ever learned in science, science was telling us that blacks are animals, they're not people. And he's saying, you know what? My scientific observations are quite different than that. But let's go ahead and stop looking at Benjamin Franklin and call him an evil slave owner, which he was never. And he was the chief abolitionist in the country.
Yeah. Contrast that against a progressive hero, Che Guevara, who believed that much, much later in history, that blacks were indolent, that they were lazy, that they were drunks, that they were not serious people. He mocked them as basically worthless because they were not serious.
Yeah, but he lived in a different time.
Yeah, a lot later than Ben Franklin.
Right?
He sure did.
Right, but that's what they'll say.
Yeah.
Well, he lived in a different time. Yeah, so did Thomas Jefferson. So did Ben Franklin. So did Madison. So did Washington. By the way, schools, they're now talking about no Franklin, no Jefferson, no Madison here in Texas. But there are Cesar Chavez schools. By the way, Cesar Chavez used violence to intimidate both growers and farm workers to force them to sign UFW contracts. This is according to FBI. Intimidation sessions included beatings, overturned cars, throwing Molotov cocktails, torching fields. 1997, 40 female UFW members filed a lawsuit against the union for urging them to use sex as a recruitment tool. Cesar Chavez hated illegal aliens. Illegals were considered a threat to the jobs of the farm workers. They patrolled the border and beat any illegal alien that they caught. And a pretty good quote here is, why are you doing this? Are you doing this for the cause or are you just angry? I suppose if I wanted to be fair, I could say I'm trying to settle a personal score. I could dramatize it by saying that I want to bring social justice to farm workers. But the truth is, I went through a lot of hell. And a lot of people did. And if we can even the score a little bit for the workers, then we're doing something. Besides, I don't know any other work I like to do better than this. I really don't. That's him beating people crossing the borders. But you got a school named after him. Tons of them. One in Phoenix, one in Detroit, one in Denver, another one in Detroit, Stockton, Eugene, Oregon, Madison, Wisconsin. How about Malcolm X? There's new thinking coming in. There's a strategy coming in. It'll be Molotov cocktails this month, hand grenades next month, and something else the month after that, be it ballots or be it bullets. We want freedom now, but we're not going to get that saying we shall overcome. We're going to fight until we overcome. There's schools with the name Malcolm X, one in Chicago, one in Berkeley, and one in Washington, D.C. They'll say, well, he had a transition at the end of his life. Yes, he did. But are you going to give that benefit of the doubt to any of the founders? Woodrow Wilson schools. There's a Woodrow Wilson. So they're thinking about taking the name of Jefferson, Franklin, and Madison off of schools in Dallas. But there is a school, the Woodrow Wilson High School in Dallas, Texas. On immigrants, he described them as men of the lowest class from Italy and of the meaner sort from Hungary and Poland, men out of the ranks where there was neither skill nor energy or any initiative of quick intelligence. And they came in by the numbers, sordid and hapless elements of their population, the men whose standards of life and work are such as American workmen had never reamed hitherto. He was appalled by the French army allowing blacks to serve next to whites. He's the guy who put the Jim Crow laws into place in Washington, D.C. Let me say that again. It was the progressive Woodrow Wilson that put the Jim Crow laws into place at the federal government level in Washington, D.C. He also allowed the Secretary of Treasury and the Postmaster General to segregate. He resegregated the military. That's your beloved Woodrow Wilson. There's schools named after him. You know what? You want to have this fight? You want to have this fight? We can have that fight. Let's just base it on facts. Because I got news for you. I'll put our founders up to the progressive heroes of the 20th century and win every single time. If you're a gun owner like me, the best thing you can do for yourself and your family is to educate yourself. First, get yourself a gun, get a permit, and then get to a range. But then also make sure you have classes on what to do. The U.S. Concealed Carry Association wants to help you with their Concealed Carry and Family Defense Guide. In this guide, you're going to learn how to detect attackers before they see you, how to survive a mass shooting. That seems crazy. Crazy that we have to have that conversation. The safest and the most dangerous places to sit in restaurants, etc., etc. How to responsibly own and store a gun, even if you have little kids, and a whole lot more. It's 164 pages, comes with a bonus audio version so you can listen to it in your car, and it's 100% free. For a limited time, you're also going to get a bonus home defense checklist. I want you to go to protectanddefend.com. Right now, 100% free access. It's instant access right now at protectanddefend.com. That is protectanddefend.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
A Facebook comment just came in, and they said we should burn all of the progressive money that has, you know, people like Andrew Jackson on there in Washington. And, of course, Lincoln isn't like, and neither is Benjamin Franklin. Here's what I'm going to do. I am offering today that you can send every one of those racist, engraved, and numbered prints that you have. And send them in. You can donate them all to mercury1.org. All you do is, if you are somebody, you say, I cannot take this racist slave owner in my pocket anymore. I will not have Benjamin Franklin. I will have nothing to do with him. And until the government takes that racist off of my money, and Andrew Jackson, too. And Hamilton, he's got a Broadway play that everybody likes, so we'll leave him alone. But Lincoln, he's out. Grant, yeah, he fought the Civil War, but he was with Lincoln. He's out. And, of course, Washington, he's out. And I want you to send all of that, and we will dispose of it at mercuryone.org.
We've done a lot of complaining about government spending over the years. Yes. Is it possible they have already put this into effect and are just burning all the money to protest?
It is very.
They do seem to be setting our money on fire.
Very possible. It is very possible.
Because, I mean, it could just be a strong stance from our government.
Right. We're going to end oppression at mercuryone.org. And so that's what I would like you to do. If you have one of those Benjamin, oh man, I hate that guy talking about him now.
Yeah.
See what they're talking about here in Dallas, right?
Oh, right. I want him
out. Get rid of the school. I want him out.
Get rid of those bills.
I want you to go through. If you're a progressive, you get those Benjamin Franklins out of there. You realize you have a government issued. So the government was endorsing him. A government issued individual serial number printed engraving of Benjamin Franklin that you are somehow or another, he is oppressing you. And I want that oppression to go away from you.
Slavery will only truly be defeated when you send us all your money.
When No. You send us those evil engravings of those evil founders. Send them to mercuryone.org.
Glenn Beck. Love, courage, truth.
You ever heard the saying, you know, the blind following the blind? It's never a good idea because usually end up in a ditch or off a cliff or something like that. And the bespectacled Bernie Sanders apparently has not heard that because he is leading us into a massive pit or off a cliff. And he knows it. The independent senator from Vermont, who calls himself a democratic socialist, which is weird because that is a term, look it up, which was coined by Lenin himself because Russians were afraid of communists. And so he said, no, we're not communists. No, we're democratic socialists. He has now proposed Medicare for all, a single payer health care system. It's a plan that would repeal Obamacare and replace it. Oh, my gosh. The Democrats are going to repeal and replace with a huge expansion of Medicare, large enough to open the government-run program to all Americans. Now, this proposal is no longer just a dream of the far left. It enjoys the support of 16 Democratic senators, including Elizabeth Warren, Cory Booker, Kristen Gillibrand, and Kamala Harris. Which, why does that list sound familiar? Oh, I remember. Because these are the people that are saying that they might run for president in 2020. Sounds good, but there's even more. There's a problem with Bernie's proposal. It is lacking in detail, specifically the little detail of, how do we pay for this? But Bernie already knows this.
You want to guarantee that all people have access to healthcare as you do in Canada. But I think what we understand is that unless we change the funding system and the control mechanisms in this country to do that, for example, if we expanded Medicaid to everybody, right? Give everybody a Medicaid card, we would be spending such an astronomical sum of money that, you know, we would bankrupt the nation.
Okay, so wait a minute. That's what he's proposing. That, by the way, was Bernie in 1987. The reason why he's avoiding the details now is because he's very well aware of the costs. In his own words, they're astronomical, and they will, I want to get this exactly right, they will bankrupt the nation, end quote. When the blind lead the blind, both shall fall into the ditch. Democrats, follow Bernie Sanders at your own peril.
It's Monday, September 18th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I had a rough weekend. I wanted to have a good weekend. I had a rough weekend. And maybe you say, you know what the problem is expectations. Expectations always get you into trouble. When you go in without any expectations, you're always bound to have a good time. But when you go into with expectations that I don't know, you're going to find utopia somehow or another, you're always disappointed.
Yes, that is 100% true.
Yes.
And it's very true with you. You have this is a tendency of yours.
How do you mean? I don't know what you...
Well, if you've noticed that you're constantly always like depressed about various...
I don't know if depression is quite the right word for it anymore.
No, you're probably not. It's a constant disappointment.
Yeah, never ending... Mm-hmm. Just feeling of doom and death. probably closer to that. I had a tough time because it was I went up to what's called the Nantucket Project, and I was invited by a new friend, Tom Scott, who runs it. And you know, he wanted to talk about redemption and alcoholism and understanding. And so that was the point of the conference. Let's understand the concept of understanding. Let's try to understand each other. And I don't think that went real well. Not with everyone. And at the same time, it was truly remarkable because I had an opportunity to meet with Paul Kagame, who is the president of Rwanda, who... It's complex because in America, he would not be a guy I would vote for. In Rwanda, he's a dream come true.
In Rwanda, you're like, are you going to, it's really one question.
Yeah.
On the
you're
going
to slaughter half of us.
Yeah, is it going to be a genocide situation?
Right. Are you going to rape the country and kill half of us?
Yeah.
No?
No?
Okay.
Great. All right. Your taxes are going to be a little high. Yeah. Okay, I can deal with that.
I'm with you. I'm with you. So, Paul is a guy who now think of a country the size of about Connecticut, about the population of Massachusetts, and think of about million and a half people killed in the streets, butchered with machetes, and raped in front of their families. In 8 months. Can you imagine what the world would be like if on our continent there was one state that just did that? How the other states would not come to the defense, let alone hopefully the whole world, but it was just left to happen. And it was because of the Hutus and the Tutsis, which I love them both. They're great. I prefer Tutsis because it sounds like I'm going to get a chocolate treat that I always loved as a kid in a roll, but I'm not sure if they're related. Don't think they are. Didn't want to ask the president that.
Probably a good instinct there.
Yeah, I thought so. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting to me to hear a guy say, you know, we knew the answer was going to come from within. It had to. It couldn't come from outside. Couldn't come from the United Nations. Couldn't come from America. Could not come from anyone else. It had to come from us. And there is no way we were going to heal with someone just jamming down a policy. So we had to do something radical. We had to do radical forgiveness. Now, what do you think radical forgiveness really is? Radical forgiveness is somebody calling in and saying, hey, I killed, you know, Stu, that guy on the radio. Yeah, I raped his wife and his daughter in the street and then slaughtered them in front of him. I really like to apologize. So the government calls you and says, hey, Stu, I know you have no family members left anymore. But the guy called in and he really liked to apologize to you. Now, first, you have to say yes. Second, you then have to listen to him describe what he did. That's part of the repentance process. He has to tell you exactly what he did. Now, that would set me off. I know, I saw it. You don't have to tell. I saw it. He has to tell you what he did, and then he has to tell you he's sorry and ask for forgiveness. Then you have to say, I forgive you. Right. And then it's all over. He doesn't go to jail. You all walk out arm in arm.
He doesn't even get punished for the crime?
How many, what's the percentage, do you suppose, went away? If you, by the way, believe you're executed if they don't forgive you. What's the percentage that walked out?
That said, I will not forgive you?
No, that said, I forgive you. Come on, let's go out together. Let's leave together.
Oh, God, I mean, I would, it's very low.
80%.
80%. 80% said, I will forgive you?
I will forgive you.
That's incredible. What's the reasoning for that? Is there something in the culture going back?
The Paul Kagame said that it is because he convinced, and he doesn't take the credit for it, but I don't know of anybody else that could have done this. He said, we had to have a frank conversation in the country that said, we need each other. We have to have each other. Half the population is gone. We kill all the people who did this. Then we have nothing left. And so we need each other. We have to forgive each other. And if we can come back together in forgiveness, we'll be stronger than ever before. And that is exactly what's happening. Their GDP rate of growth is 8% every year since 2001.
Wow, that's incredible. I mean, obviously, what's ours? You know, three if we're lucky.
Try this on for size. They're now delivering medicine and supplies around the country with drones. We're not even doing that.
Really?
They are, for Africa, they are way ahead. They are the most stable in Africa. They have tapped into something that hopefully we'll never need. God forbid we would ever need something that dramatic.
Well, we had a civil war. I mean, it's, you know, that's pretty dramatic. And we, you know, half the country was at war with the other half of the country.
I don't think we ever healed from it.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't seem like that today.
No, I think as Americans tend to do, I think we said, no, I'm good. No, I'm good. You know, Lincoln died and nobody wanted to continue the war. And everybody was like, no, you know, I'm good. We're fine. We're fine. We'll get along. And I don't think we ever had that process of, I'm sorry, I forgive. And then, you know, 20, 30 years later, we had Jim Crow and, you know, the Dixiecrats and the Klan and all of that stuff. And I think after Martin Luther King was killed, we all went, you know what? I'm good. No. We're all good. We're good. Okay. Yeah, we're all together. And we've never had those conversations. And I'm not sure. And I'm not talking about a conversation on like, okay, so now, all right. So now you get, I mean, the kind of conversation. Notice there was no reparation there. They're not saying, okay, you need to give me your hut or your cow or whatever those people might have in the outskirts of Rwanda. They're not saying give me stuff. They're saying I forgive you. And I met some of the people that have gone through this, and in truly remarkable fashion, they are friends, literal friends now, with people who killed every member of their family. One woman who everyone in her family was killed by this guy. She now says he didn't want to approach her because he was afraid that she would always hate him. And so he really felt really bad about it, obviously, and realized he was duped. He was just a part of this anger. See, this sounds familiar to the extreme. This anger between these two groups, and they were just had convinced each group that the other group was a monster. And so the only way we could do it is if we killed everybody in this. And they did. And as soon as it was over, they said that the killers realized, oh, crap, what have we done? he couldn't live with himself. He was one of the first to call and say, I want to apologize, and I'll take the punishment if I have to. He apologized to her. She forgave him. Now they're good friends. She's married and has a son or a daughter. When she has to go out and work, if she has to go do something, she'll leave her children with him, the guy who killed her whole family.
Wow. It feels like a terrible decision, to be perfectly honest.
And you know what?
But it works somehow.
It is. Paul Kagame said, forgiveness is a choice. And once you make that choice, forgiveness becomes a miracle. You know, a crisis doesn't bring out a new version of you, and you know this. How many times have you done something really stupid, and you're like, I'm sorry, I was really stressed out? Well, when your family's at stake, when there's a crisis, that's the version of you that comes out, and if you're not prepared to be the best version of yourself, you can rise to the level of preparedness and education. But only if you are educated and prepared. We've seen examples like this from Houston to Florida all last month. My Patriot Supply. These are the people I've trusted my food storage with as a family. They have a 70-serving survival food kit now for $67. It's healthy food, lasts up to 25 years. For less than a dollar per serving, you'll get breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Call 800-977-0542 or order online with preparewithglenn.com. You can... be prepared for any eventuality, and that means being able to bring food down to others who have just been hit, or being able to be a shelter for a storm for somebody, or unfortunately yourself or your family. We're all going to be humbled. Are you going to be prepared to be your best self? A prepared America is a strong America, and that's My Patriot Supply's mission. Call 800-977-0542 or preparewithglenn.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Paul Kagame said, forgiveness is a process and a choice. It's a difficult thing. But if you sacrifice yourself to someone who has hurt you, it's a miracle. Boy, do we need to hear those words. Stu, would you look something up? Because there's no way this is true. I heard this and I wrote it down. I'm like, no way. The ninth safest country in the world is Rwanda. This is according to him.
There are stories that... do indicate that rate. Let's see.
Ninth safest country in the world. Take a guess which, according to these surveys, and I don't know how they rank them. But
I think the costliness of common crime and violence, as well as terrorism, and the extent to which police services can be relied upon to provide protection from crime.
Ninth safest in the world, Rwanda. The United States? 89th. Is that true?
I do not see the United States in the top 20 here. Number one is Finland, in case you were interested. UAE, Iceland, Oman, Hong Kong, Singapore, Norway, Switzerland.
A lot of those, some of those are because they cut your head off. No, he was just, he didn't mean to steal a napkin. He had an allergy attack. Sorry, well, we have to cut his face off.
When you look at this list, though, it's largely the type of list you'd see at the top of... places with economic freedom, with good growing economies, largely. Rwanda would be one that would stand out, and you would not expect it to be there.
Give me the top 10.
Finland, UAE, Iceland, Oman, Hong Kong, Singapore, Norway, Switzerland, Rwanda, Qatar. Again, you got that's another
great wealth.
Right? Luxembourg, one of the highest per capita wealth countries on earth, if not the.
So you have great wealth and stability, and then Rwanda.
Yeah.
That's bizarre.
There's no other African nation in the top 20.
There's no way. There is absolutely no way that you would say to me, hey, you know what? You should go to Rwanda. No, seriously, it's safe. You'd be like, shut up.
Right. Now, I don't know, this would be a little American here for a moment. I'm not sure that I would trade the life that I have now for one in Rwanda.
I don't know enough about Rwanda. Mm-hmm. I know I don't like leaving the comforts that we have here in the first world.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure of that.
And safety, I do feel, while they're all are really rough areas, generally speaking, pretty safe in America.
Yes. It's just you have to know where you are. And by the way, we're one, the most diverse culture in the history of the world, and we're rather large.
Is that a fat joke?
Who would I be to make a fat joke? I think that would be right.
Yeah, no, that's true. It's an incredible thing. I mean, you know, I understand. I mean, imagine getting over something like that where someone is murdering your entire family, a genocide. However, it is one thing to get an apology for a genocide. When someone tweets something nasty at you, you cannot forgive them.
Right.
That is over the line.
Right.
If someone's on your Facebook wall and they're saying something offensive, hold them to that till they die.
And
to the day they die.
Yes.
Every moment for the rest of your life should be spent in anger and outrage at that person. That is how society's supposed to work.
I'm with you 100%.
Okay, good.
They don't understand in Rwanda.
They don't understand.
We have political differences here.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Important.
Yeah, the Hooties and the Two Shoes or whatever they are.
Hutus and the Tootsies.
Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that's nothing.
We have the Republicans and the Democrats.
Right, and they're much further apart on main issues than the Hutus and the Tutsis were in the Rwandan genocide.
Right. For instance, the Republicans want to repeal and replace Obamacare. And now, under Bernie Sanders, he would like to repeal and replace Obamacare.
But in a different way.
Completely. One is complete socialized medicine, and the other is...
Well, socialized medicine, but kind of different in a different way.
It's a different way, because it's a Republican proposal.
Right, socialized medicine.
Glenn Beck. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program, the one, the only, Mr. One Twice, some say number 11 on iTunes.
I like One
podcast,
Twice better.
One Twice.
Yeah, I like
Mr.
That
Pat
better.
Gray, welcome to the program, Pat.
Thank you. We had an interesting email from some people in, they run a youth group called RCC Youth in Richmond, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
They took 5 RCC youth, 16 and 17 year olds, all from Section 8 public housing to the Confederate monuments in Richmond for one purpose, so they can formulate their own opinions before the media frenzy is going to ravage through Richmond. It was a powerful experience. Upon returning back to the RCC headquarters, they all talked about it, and then one of the kids, 17-year-old Daquan Morton, typed this out. He said, "Today, me and my peers decided to visit the monuments to see what all the fuss was about, and we came up with this. Is it more convenient to take down some statues than to improve the real problem of society?"
Oh, my gosh, thank you.
Yes. Yes. I bring sanity to this particular broadcast. A lot of people think that the problem with society is racism, but racism is only the feeling of one race being better than another. From living in low-income areas, we have our own ideas about society. Everybody pointing blame at Monument Avenue and statues that reside there, but those statues never did anything to me or any people that I care about. The only thing that ever harmed people in these low-income areas is the violence that resides there in the low-income areas. In low-income areas, 5 kids each from different areas collectively know 22 people who've been killed over the past year.
Oh, my gosh.
Over
in the past
the
year?
The past year. Not in their lifetime. Over the past year.
I know, we all know, Navy SEALs who have said to us in a moment of despair, I can't go to another funeral of a friend.
Right, yeah.
I don't know. I don't think they've lost 22 friends in a year.
Right. And these kids, I mean... This really kind of puts everything into perspective, I think. he says, he goes on, from the day we're born, we're taught nobody cares and nobody can help. What if I told you there are kids starving in your own backyard, living in rundown buildings? What if I told you that there are kids that would rather rob, steal, and kill rather than go into a house with nothing to eat? Every day, kids like these say to themselves, do whatever to get them bands, which is money, I guess. And if they don't give it to me, I'm a take it. Meaning everybody's young, dumb, and broke. Instead of using money to knock down statues that most people in low-income areas never even saw, how about using that money to improve schools, fix up the community, and see that we every day not protest in our neighborhoods where we see violence and hate the most? I mean, just unbelievable wisdom from a 17-year-old kid who's seen nothing but violence in his life. And it's nice to go to this source and talk to the people who should be the most offended, and they're not. They're not offended by these statues. They don't care about the statues. They care about their lives. Be nice if we could go, you know, kind of reorganize the focus and put it where it belongs. But we're not going to.
You're never
going to
solve the racism problem without these getting rid of these racist statues. These statues who judge us by the color of our skin instead of the content of our character.
No, they're made of bronze.
These statues look down on us because they're built so high for a reason.
Yeah, they don't have eyes, Stu. They don't have eyes.
They do have eyes. I've seen them.
They don't have eyes of hate.
They don't have working eyes.
No, it's
an empty... It's an empty piece of metal. I don't know if you noticed that.
An empty piece of metal.
Or plaster.
Yeah. Or
bronze, whatever. Yeah.
Plaster.
The people that they represent are dead, long dead.
What color would, let's say, a plaster statue be, Pat?
Well, it could be painted, so it could be...
If it's not painted, what would it be, painted.
Pat? Could be painted. I could see them painted all the time. I don't know. I see those.
I've seen them painted brown a lot.
Yeah, a lot.
It happens all the time. Yeah. So I'm not even going to hazard a guess as to what color it is.
You know that all the marble statues from Rome were painted? Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, all the paint has gone off of them. They were originally all painted.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, they have a few in
They were marble and then they were painted?
And they painted them. Yeah.
That's classy.
And really garish colors. There's one or two in the Vatican Museum. And
Did they not understand how gauche that is?
It really looks like it's bad. It looks really bad. It's like, whoa, that's ugly, gauche. I mean, more gauche than a big marble statue. I mean, that's saying something.
Yes, it is.
And really tacky. I mean, the colors are not so... They aren't good of colors.
It feels like a really weird thing for us to even have today. Just statues in general. It's a really weird thing that we pulled over from the old days. I mean, especially when, you know, it's a strange... I don't know. Would you want a statue made of you?
I mean, you don't usually get them when you're alive.
No, I know. Not
it's
usually.
It's not like Lincoln was like, I don't know. I think the chair needs to be bigger.
That was his commentary.
When he commissioned the monument.
He's like,
that's not big enough.
But yeah. I'm saying, though, like it's meant to remember people usually and to honor them in some way. Not always, but usually is. And it's not something that I would want made of me. It's weird. It's like, you know, it's fashioning an image of someone else. There are commandments that deal with things such as these.
Well, that's, you know, it's weird because I have Jewish friends who talk about that and say, this is one of the reasons why you don't have this.
Because, graven images?
Yeah, because it's not just a God thing, but it's also because what part of a person are you glorifying?
Yeah.
You can't glorify. Yeah. I mean,
and every person you glorify has many, many faults, and you can pick all of them apart.
Of course. Yeah, because they're people.
Yeah.
They're just
human beings.
Yeah.
And maybe when we make them into statues and monuments, it glorifies them too much. I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't know.
It's a weird thing that we would continue doing. I kind of understand that at times human history.
We continue doing. Do you know of a statue company that's roaring to life right now? I mean,
you're telling me that they're not making statues?
No, I'll tell you, in Silicon Valley, this statue thing is taken off.
I mean, of course there are statue companies.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not like we're doing a lot of them. What are we doing?
There's
probably more statue repair.
I mean, I will refer you to a somewhat recent documentary entitled Rocky, And in Rocky III, as he was retiring, they gave him a nice big statue, which still exists today. Statues go up,
but it's there in real life, right? I mean, isn't
there really? It was on the steps. It was on the steps where at the top where he would run up the stairs. But the art people thought it was too gauche.
They did.
This is not art. Rocky is not art. And so they actually moved him to, where was it? The Spectrum?
Yeah,
is that what that
which
was?
Is no longer there. But they had, it's in that area still, with the sports complex, which is kind of where you would think it kind of belongs.
Sylvester Stallone actually has a statue in Philadelphia.
It's a real one. It's awesome. It's well,
I
it's
thought
Rocky
it was appropriate.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it was appropriate at the top of the... Please.
Yeah.
You'll put, you know, you'll put like a 30-foot vagina out in front of a building. Yeah. You can't have you can't have Rocky on the stairs. Come on, man.
It's a fair point. I got news for you.
That's art. That's art. That Rocky, that's a piece of crap. But that vagina, that is art.
I gotta say too, for all you artsy people out there, the only reason anyone goes to your stupid museum is to run up those stairs. I got news for you, Philadelphia. It's the only reason anyone's ever at the top of those stairs to go into that building is because of that movie.
Oh, that's for sure.
So
Let me rephrase that. As somebody who has been to Philadelphia and lived in Philadelphia for quite some time, it's also the reason why people go maybe halfway up the stairs.
Okay.
You couldn't make it all the way.
You couldn't make it all the way up. You're just like, this is good enough.
He was a professional boxer. Of course he could make it all the way to the top. Pat Gray Unleashed comes up right after this program on the Blaze Radio Network and TV Network. It's a great show, and you should subscribe on iTunes to the podcast and make it go over one twice, which is really 11.
And you can find it on the blaze.com, which, by the way, we've changed a lot of things at the Blaze. Go to the front page. You'll see the stories that matter the most. You know, what we're trying to do is simplify things a little bit and give you the top five stories that we think are important that people will talk about and that you need to know and that actually may impact your life. And read them, because like the one from Hobby Lobby, did you read that today on the
page? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Did you read the perspective? Did you get to the perspective?
I didn't get to the perspective yet.
Yeah. Read the perspective on why we included that, because that's not a story that's going to affect you. Hobby Lobby selling a stupid vase with cotton in it. Somebody found that offensive, and now everybody's raging.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a story. Here's the perspective on that story. This just shows you how sweet our life is in America, that we have the time to argue about stuff like that. If somebody is, look, nobody's starving. Nobody who is at the end of their rope is going into Hobby Lobby and going, oh, and another thing, I'm really offended by that. No.
Mm-hmm. No.
We're a really blessed country. So anyway, just check it out, if you will. We'd love to keep you involved and hear your thoughts. But we've kind of soft launched today a new approach at theblaze.com. And, you know, I want you to know it is kind of a mantra of mine that I know that at The Blaze we're going to get this right. After we've exhausted absolutely every other way of doing it, we will get it right. So who knows? Give it a whirl. Maybe this time. Traveling can be a real hassle. Flights, hotels, rental cars, it can be a little overwhelming. But not with Upside.com. Upside is going to reward you with a gift card to places like Amazon.com every time you buy a business trip. Stu, you've used Upside.
Oh, yeah, a bunch of times.
Pat, you've used it as well, I think.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Saved a ton of money.
Yep.
And you get free stuff. That's the better part. I mean, Upside, you know, sure, do I want to save, you know, my company money? Sure, whatever. Free Amazon gift cards. And you know what?
And that's almost unbelievable, too.
Yeah.
I mean, they're good gift cards.
Yeah.
It's not like, here's $5.
Yeah, or here's a gift card to a place that is 1,000 miles away that you can't use.
Right.
It's Amazon. You can buy basically everything. And considering about 3/4 of my salary goes to Amazon, it's very convenient.
How long before Amazon and Google start making their own Bitcoin, if you will? Have you thought of that?
Like an ICO?
Mm-hmm.
Amazon starts their own ICO. And so you just, you know, you just have your money with Amazon and you buy those and, you know, you just, your economy is all in Amazon.
Amazon bucks.
Yeah. I mean, I bet that's not far away. Anyway, Upside. Upside also has their customer service specialists. They call them navigators. Navigator will, you know, watch what you're doing and they're there so you can ask for help. But let's say you book yourself in a middle seat. You don't know it on a 3-hour flight. The navigator will just pop in and go, hey, you know, there's another seat available. There's a lot more leg room and you're not in the middle. Upside navigators, instantly accessible 24/7 by voice, chat, email, or message on the Upside app, reducing the friction that you feel when you're trying, or just try, you're just trying to go from one city to another. Go to upside.com. Use the promo code Beck. You'll get a $100 minimum gift card at amazon.com. That's promo code Beck. Minimum gift card, amazon.com. When you buy your next business trip at upside.com, minimum purchase is required. See site for complete details.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
I actually invented this in my head. You ever have that happen to you where some, like, you invent something in your head and you realize that someone else really a lot smarter than you did it already?
Oh, I used to do that as a kid all the time.
But it's actually my invention.
Yeah, I invented the street sweeper vacuum. That was my invention.
You did that?
Yeah.
Wow, but in reality, somebody else did it
long before me, but that was my invention.
And they made the money.
That's, I learned young, just give up. Everything's been thought of.
That's kind of where I am. It's sad.
It really is. You come up with something, you're like, that is genius. Oh, it's already out on the market? Oh.
Yeah. Like, okay. Maslow's Hierarchy of Needs,
yeah,
which is in the Blaze article you were just referring to about, mm-hmm, Hobby Lobby. And there's this kind of a pyramid of what a person actually cares about. And a long time ago, I had a friend who was going through some financial trouble. And it was, you know, going through a tough time in his life. This is like when we were just out of high school. And he was talking about wanting to improve his career. And he's talking about wanting to, you know, get a girlfriend and all the things that you want to do when you're in that time in your 20s, early 20s. And I was like, you have to get past, like, thinking about survival first.
Yeah.
You can't worry about what car you have and who you're dating. You need to be able to feed yourself first. And once you get past that, and this happens, I think, in societies as well. People are like, oh, the global warming, they have to make sure they're doing... How about, energy so I can heat my house so I can live?
So, you know, it was really interesting to me in this conference that I was attending this weekend, talking to these girls from Rwanda who had all come to the United States to go to college. Most of them are going back home, and it was amazing. I have my degree in sustainable farming. I have my degree in power infrastructure. All things that you're like, okay, well, you need that. You're going to have a great job. Then one said, I'm getting my degree in feminist studies. And I thought, that's going to be a hard one to work. I mean, you're going to have a hard time finding a job in Rwanda with that, I think. And she said, well, I'm staying here. And it was really interesting the way she phrased this. I'm staying here because I think the world really needs me. I think my experience really will help the world. And I don't know where they need me the most, but the world needs me. And I'm like, honey, the world doesn't. No, it doesn't. I mean, would you like
no
to go
to her? Right?
No just offense
no
to
one,
no.
The world doesn't need anybody.
No, it doesn't need anybody. It really doesn't need me. Doesn't need you. Doesn't need anybody. Can you go? Can you flip that? How can I go and help? I really, there's so much the world has that I can go and I just want to help. I want to relieve the suffering or the pain or whatever. It was really fascinating to me how the ones that were going back, they were all like, I need a degree in how do we eat? And the one who said, I'm going to stay in the West was like, how can I piss people off?
Glenn Beck.